Hi, this is Dan Melton. Thanks for joining us for this podcast of St. Andrew's Weekly Message. I hope you enjoy it. I encourage you to listen through the words to what God is saying to you, and may the peace of God be known through your life this week. How's Christmas going? How's Advent going? How is everyone doing? How are you doing online? I hope everyone is pacing themselves and enjoying and making sure to prioritize the things that matter, time with those that we love. I know errands are important too, but prioritizing that time that we love and also saving energy and saving time to spend with those that we love can be so important. Otherwise, Christmas can just blow right by us, huh? 1999, there is a king of Jordan who is very young, King Abdullah, and he wanted to better understand the plight of his citizens. I believe he was 37 years old, fairly young for a king, modern king anyway. And so he started going undercover in disguise and going out into the city so that he could listen to people and show up as an ordinary man. The Washington Post describes it this way. On his first undercover jaunt 10 days ago, Abdullah donned a traditional long white robe. So he had the robe, a red and white checked headdress, it's called a keffiyeh, and the final touch, he added a scraggly white beard. Posing as a television producer, he accompanied a cameraman and a, quote, reporter, who happened to be his press secretary, into Jordan's state-run trade zone, where he got an earful from merchants about red tape and inefficiency from the government. So the king was finally outed by the local police, who accosted the crew and demanded to see their permit to be doing this interview and to film. So Abdullah was unable to shake them, and by some accounts a little bit annoyed at how persistent they were, so he finally removed his disguise to the general astonishment and delight of all. The Post continues again, this was written in 1999. Disguised again last Tuesday, the king cruised the streets of Amman, that's the capital of Jordan, in a taxi driven by an aide, ostensibly to assess the performance of traffic police and listen to passengers' complaints. At one point, his cab cut off another car, taking care to do it directly in front of an officer of the law who pulled the offenders over, but they got off with a scolding this time. The Post continues and concludes, Abdullah's clandestine forays also have roots into Arab culture, reaching back to the splendors of the 8th century Islamic empire. There, as recounted in the Arabian Nights, the caliphs, or the rulers, wandered the streets of Baghdad in disguise, soliciting the opinions of their subjects, attending to the needs of the suffering, and occasionally ordering executions on the spot. Ever since the word of the king's disguise got out, remember, robe, keffiyeh, scraggly white beard. The joke has been circulating in Amman. What's the best way to get anything done in Jordan today? Answer, be short, wear a long robe and a red headdress and grow a white scraggly beard. Well, if you were an ordinary Jordanian in one of these scenes, what you might not realize is behind the guise of someone who shows up as very ordinary is actually a person of great power. Paul the Apostle, as he talks about Jesus, explains to us that in the humble and ordinary person of Jesus who shows up as a carpenter is actually a person of great power who humbled himself to live among us. The God of the universe has humbled himself to live among us. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 19, Paul tells us that in the fullness for in Christ, the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. For in him, the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. We've been talking about this little paragraph in Colossians chapter 1, and I thought, wow, I gave myself a bit of a difficult assignment because this passage is about the meaning of Christ. When we talk about Christ, we're talking about Jesus. Jesus is not less than Christ. Christ is not more than Jesus. And yet, when we talk about Christ, we tend to be talking more about the universal implications of who Jesus is. And that's what Paul is talking about in this paragraph in Colossians chapter 1. And in this little sentence, he says a lot. He says, for in Christ, the fullness of God, the God of the universe, was pleased to dwell. We have to remember, as we're trying to figure out where Paul is coming from, that Paul never met Jesus in earthly flesh. Paul only meets the risen Christ on the road to Damascus as Paul is on his way there to persecute Christians. So when Paul encounters Jesus as the risen Lord, he has to start thinking through, what does this all mean? And he's a Pharisee. He's well-versed in the Jewish law. A Pharisee was sort of a hybrid of a lawyer, a Jewish lawyer, and religious leader. And so he has to figure out, knowing all he knows about the law of Moses and all the law codes, what in the world is going on? This crucified carpenter appears to me on the road to Damascus. He's resurrected, and he says, Paul, I'm the one that, Saul, I'm the one that you're persecuting. What in the world does this mean? So he has to comb back, and he has to lean back into his Judaism and also do some original thinking to think about who this person must be. And so he comes up with this phrase that the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in Christ. The word fullness is an important word. It's used in a lot of different ways throughout different eras of civilization in the Greek language. Here, the Greek word, the way I might convey it is there's a quality to it. We Westerners tend to think in linear ways in terms of quantity, but I don't think you can really quantify the fullness of God in a human being. There's a quality to it. So think for a moment. Think of phrases like the fullness of time. The fullness of time. Think of a pregnant woman giving birth at exactly the right time, not too soon, not later than she wants to give birth, but right at the proper time. There's a fullness to that moment. Or, changing gears completely, the feeling of exhilaration when you go over the highest hill of a roller coaster and you start to drop and you feel the exhilaration in your body. And you might open your mouth and scream. There's a fullness there. We can think of abundance, too. We can think of a plate full of delicious food. We can think of a time with someone that we're with someone we love, and our hearts feel full. See what I mean about the quality? There's a quality to fullness. Mark Batterson writes about someone that I had the privilege of meeting, Dr. Tony Campolo, who was at Eastern College for years and years. I don't know if he's retired now or not, but an amazing person, stands up for social justice and also a Baptist preacher, this sort of all-in-one package, and has so much energy. When he's teaching one time visiting at the University of Pennsylvania, Tony once turned an ordinary lecture into an unforgettable lesson, according to Batterson. He asked an unsuspecting student sitting in the front row, "Young man, how long have you lived?" The student answered with his age, "I'm X number of years old." Tony said, no, that's not what I'm asking. That's how long your heart has been pumping blood. That's not how long you have lived. Tony then told the class about one of his most memorable moments. In 1944, his fourth grade class took a field trip to the top of the Empire State Building. It was the tallest building in the world at the time. So when 9-year-old Tony got off the elevator and stepped onto the observation deck, overlooking New York City, time stood still. He said, "In one mystical, magical moment, I took in the whole city. If I live a million years, that moment will still be a part of my consciousness because I was fully alive when I lived it." When have you experienced a fullness in your life? Tony turned back to the student and said, "Now let me ask you the question again. How long have you lived?" The student said rather sheepishly, "Well, when you talk about it that way, maybe an hour. Maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes." This is the power of fullness. Young Tony took in the fullness of all that was around him. The immensity, the bigness of the city filled his little heart with awe and wonder. What has filled your heart with awe and wonder to the extent that you've experienced a kind of fullness? That is a mirror, a reminder of the fullness of the universal, of the God who rules the universe, who lives in Christ. You know, I was thinking there is a difference between existing and existing as fullness, and that story about Tony really illustrates that. And I think there's another important connection to make with regard to this fullness, that not only do we not want to just exist, but we want to exist in fullness. Christ exists in the fullness of God always, eternally, and always has, does, and always will. And Paul makes another connection that's important in the New Testament. Paul believes that this Christ, this risen Christ, in whom is the fullness of God, dwells in us, dwells in you. He uses phrases like this. I found a couple. This is from Philippians. The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. He greets the Colossians, to the saints and faithful brothers in Christ. 2 Timothy, you then, my child, be strong in the grace that is in Jesus Christ. Philemon, yes, brother, let me have this benefit from you in the Lord. Refresh my heart in Christ. The fullness of God meets humanity in the life of Christ, and Paul understands us as being somehow in Christ. Christ dwells in us in the same way that the fullness of God dwells in Christ. So this is the language of spiritual union and communion with God. God dwells fully in Christ. Christ dwells in us. We are united with God through Christ. We enjoy communion with God through Christ. When we celebrate the sacrament, that might be something to go back to and pray about and think about as the way in which you are communing with God and in union with God through Christ. Now, you may say that's all good. It's in the scriptures. And it's very abstract. How does that work practically? Well, I think different people find that communion with God unfolds in different ways. Some do what we might call spiritual exercises or discipline, like prayer, devotions, fasting. Some, it's devotion, it's a combination of that, maybe with some devotional art or music. It might be spiritual friendships and relationships. It might be doing missions work. Some people feel the closest to God when they're working with the poor. Maybe it's a combination of all of that. I also thought about this. Sometimes we can learn about one thing by exploring the opposite. So I asked myself as I was preparing this and trying to pull apart, like, what in the world? How do we wrap our heads around this? I thought, well, maybe if we explore the opposite, we can get an idea of what fullness is not. So fullness, I want to say, is not like emptiness. Fullness is not like emptiness. And if there's one thing that humanity knows, it's the path of emptiness. And there are all things, all kinds of things that contribute to emptiness in life. Some people chase after the wrong things in life. They worship money and prestige and power, only to figure out at the end of all that, they're not actually happy. Some people get on what I'm going to call the moving sidewalk of culture. You know, last time you might have been in an airport trying to get between terminal to terminal. You know, those walking, the conveyor belt sidewalks where you get on them. You don't have to do anything. They just kind of move you along. I think culture can be that way. I just step on it. It takes me where it wants me to go. Whatever I see in the movies, whatever I see on TV, whatever I hear on my cable news network of choice or see on Facebook or Instagram on TikTok, I just hop on that, and that just sort of takes me to a destination, and that sort of becomes my truth. Whereas ultimately, none of those cultural sources are a source of truth. And they won't answer you if you pray to them, and they won't console you either. Philosophically, we live in an age that many might call existentialist. And there are other descriptors too, like postmodern, and there's sort of a combination of labels we could talk about there. But we might say, in summary, that much of society and culture, not all, but much of society and culture has rejected God as creator and has had to come up with other things to try, as rabbit trails to follow, to try to find some semblance of happiness. And once that move is made, one of the conclusions that people come to is that, well, this life is all that there is. This brain is made of meat. I exist in the neurons of my brain and nowhere else and nothing more. And when my heart stops beating, that is the end of me and that is the end of you. And so I guess if that's the way life is, I have to make the most of this existence. And so I attempt to find meaning. Existentialism is finding meaning within one's existence. And I try to put a positive spin on that, but ultimately it gets to be kind of fatalistic. And I want to suggest that there can be much beauty in these philosophies, and I want to suggest that that can lead to a kind of emptiness and despair. And if you study literature and some of Kafka and Sartre and some of the others out there, that can be very, very dark, and there can be a lot of despair. Jesus represents the opposite of that emptiness and despair. Jesus is filled with the fullness of God, and that includes God's eternal nature. And Paul believes that we are in Christ and Christ is in us, which means we are in eternity and eternity is in us now, in you. When we celebrate the sacrament of the Lord's Supper, we celebrate that hope. So, take a moment. Take a moment to remember a satisfying moment of fullness or abundance in your life. We can trace all fullness back to the creator of all fullness and abundance, who is God. And I want to invite you to take that moment as a snapshot of fullness. And in your prayer, in a silent prayer, which we'll engage in just a moment, say thank you and praise Jesus and worship Christ as the fullness of God. And may that prayer bring meaning to this time of Advent. So I invite you to be still, to be quiet, to pray. Sink down in a moment of relative silence. I know you are managing little kiddos who do such an amazing job in worship. We're so proud of our young people.